Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, chats with SF Arts Ed Artistic Director Emily Keeler about the young cast involved in the upcoming production of Lil Abner at the Eureka Theater. Danny Duncan, director of the show, is also with us. Jazz vocalist Paula West will share details about her gig at Feinstein's at the Nico. Lisa Steinler, artistic director of Z-Space, shares some details about the world premiere of 100 Days, a folk rock odyssey conceived and composed by the Bengsons. And Charlie Varon is here to talk about his role as a feisty old Jew at the Marsh. So stay with us. We'll have a special tickets for you later. Will your child ultimately a ballerina, be a ballerina or a doctor? Well, there are lots of options in between, and part of the journey of childhood should be encouraging children to be creative. The San Francisco Arts Education Project believes that immersing kids in the arts is key to preparing them to become lively, robust adult beings. Since 1968, more than 200,000 elementary and middle school children have danced, painted, written, acted, sculpted, sung, and performed through SF Arts Ed Learning. Here to talk about the project and the current theater production underway involving SF Arts kids, Lil Abner, at the Eureka Theater through March 2nd, is Emily Keeler, who since 1985 has been artistic director of SF Arts Ed, a project that was started by Ruth Asawa. A dancer, choreography, educator, and advocate of the arts, Emily is the recipient of 4 National Endowment for the Arts Choreographic Fellowships, among other honors, and she served for several years on the San Francisco Arts Commission. Emily, welcome back to KLW.
Hello.
She's joined by Danny Duncan, director of Lil Abner, which is the current show they're working on, who's been a part of the organization for 25 years, a native San Franciscan and a playwright in his own right. He's been a part of the theater scene in San Francisco really for his whole life. Danny, welcome to KLW.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Emily, there's some really impressive numbers that have gone through this program. Can you tell us a little bit about its earlier days?
In 1968, Ruth Asawa started the Alvarado Arts Workshop. She was a parent of children at the Alvarado School. She herself was a significant artist and felt as though what her children needed, what all children needed, was education in the arts. And the program began as a volunteer program with she and her friends, who were artists and gardeners, and it really grew from then. The organization became professionalized through community arts programs in the 70s and really hit its stride in the mid-70s with artists being hired to go into not only that school, but many schools in San Francisco. The organization then changed its focus. Ruth changed her focus, and she became interested in starting the School of the Arts, which is now called Ruth Asawa School of the Arts.
Right.
The organization supported that. But as soon as the high school was begun and was on its feet, so to speak, in the early 80s, Ruth and her organization turned their attention back to elementary school children and middle school children, because in her thinking, and I think it was quite wise, how are kids going to show up to that school, that high school, prepared as young artists unless there was arts in all of the elementary and middle schools? And by then, 1978, Prop 13 had passed, and artists teaching had been taken out of the public schools. So this organization really reinvented itself several times. And in the early 80s, in 85, that's when this organization began to hit its stride again as providing arts education for elementary and middle school students. And we started with dance, and now we are working in visual arts, lots of visual arts, music, musical theater, percussion, vocal music in 27 schools.
Wow. So I was going to ask you, how is it administered? So it's not in one central location, it's individual programs in different schools.
Precisely right. And the strength of the organization, we think, is that it is not centralized. It's that we provide these services to the schools in the way that the schools are able to and like to receive them. So it begins with a long conversation with the principal and often a committee at the school, finding out what that school wants, what kinds of artists and arts they want, and providing them with that and with those artists.
So would an artist or a musician have a residency with the SF Arts Ed organization, or would they be assigned to a specific school, or how does that work?
The artists work for us as independent contractors, and we, as it were, match them to the schools. Many of the artists work for a full year in a school. That's our preference.
Mm-hmm. And how is the organization primarily funded then?
Like a lot of nonprofits, through independent money, through community foundations, through family foundations, some governmental money, some of the city monies that are transferred to the schools.
So if I wanted to make a donation, do you suppose I could go to sfartsed.org and make a donation?
Absolutely.
I just might consider that. I hope our listeners do as well to keep this program thriving.
Thank you so much.
Now, the program involves a theatrical aspect, which is what we're here to talk about, especially with Danny Duncan, who is directing Lil Abner. Lil Abner, 1956 musical by Johnny Mercer and Gene DePaul. Johnny Mercer giving us such great lyrics as On the Atchison, Topeka in the Santa Fe, Moon River, as well as the words and music to the Sinatra classic Summer Wind. Lil Abner not quite as well known in the repertoire as his other standards. This is a musical adaptation of the Al Cap comic strip. Now, Danny, how does the organization decide on the musical, and does that happen every year?
It does happen every year, and Emily always asks me what musical that I want to do, and I selected Abner because it was a show that I was quite taken with as a child, and one day I wanted to do a production of it, and she gave me the opportunity with the kids. And it's a kid-friendly show. The story lends itself totally to children performing it. And
For folks that aren't familiar with the Al Cap comic strip, why don't you give us a little bit of synopsis and set the scene for Lil Abner for us?
With regard to the plot?
Sure.
It's about the Yoakum Berry tonic. Mammy Yoakum grows Yoakum Berry berries on a tree, and she makes a tonic of this for her son. And Abner is very buffed and robust, and the government hears about it and wants the tonic for scientific purposes for the masses, and the villain, General Bull Moose, intervenes, and he is the villain who wants to steal it away from the government and so forth and so on.
It does lend itself well to a musical adaptation.
Yes.
So how are the kids selected for the program?
The children are auditioned. We start, I think, from the age of 9 to middle school. And some of them have been with us since they were 9 and on the verge of attending high school. So they sing, dance, act, and the audition process is very severe. It's very competitive, and it's not easy. And you have got to have some kind of a gift in order for you to become one of the players. It's not for anybody.
These performances will be happening at the Eureka Theater. I imagine that's a special partnership you folks have arranged. Where do rehearsals take place?
Of the School of the Arts in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We have a relationship with them and their technical theater department. They always assist us with regard to sets and lights and so forth. And it's a wonderful relationship between Arts Ed and SOTA that we collaborate together on the musical every year. And the contribution that they make to the show is monumental, to say the least.
Well, I remember one of my strongest childhood memories is from middle school when we did musicals in the summer musical is what got me involved in music and got me involved in theater as well as orchestral music playing. We did How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying one summer, and Bye Bye Birdie another summer, and Fiddler on the Roof.
We've done just all those shows.
Totally started me in the arts. And it's, I know it's an impressionable age, and it's a great age to involve kids in this.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the rehearsal process like? How often are the kids rehearsing?
3 days a week.
Wow.
Mm, 3 days a week and all day on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to spend an entire day on a Saturday doing theater is not normal for children. So the theater kids who are children who are bitten by the bug, you know, they're just a different breed unto themselves. They're just not normal in the sense of just being a child, you know.
So that's Danny Duncan. He's directing Lil Abner. Emily, I don't have the statistic right in front of me. How long? When is the program start, and how long is it running?
The Players.
The Players. Oh, yeah, the actual
so
Lil Abner at the Eureka.
We have two more weekends.
Oh, fantastic!
So we have Friday night, 7 p.m. Two matinees Saturday and Sunday at 2, and also the following weekend, which is the end of February and the beginning of March. Also Friday night, Saturday matinee 2, and then the last matinee is at 1 o'clock.
Great. And more information as well as a place to learn more about the whole organization is at sfartsed.org. What's happening after Lil Abner? I understand in April there's a special fundraiser coming up.
Yes, a couple of things. We're going to be having a special show and auction, live auction, at the new Catherine Clark Gallery in Potrero Hill. It's going to be featuring the artwork of our new art and design program, as well as work from our International Orange exhibit, which happened 2 years ago, celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Golden Gate Bridge. So it will be a really wonderful celebration of our expanded work in visual arts. We now have an after-school program, much like the Players, but for visual arts, for kids that are really interested in working intensely and intensively with artists to explore who they are as young artists, also middle school kids, as are the Players.
Sounds fantastic. Well, again, more information at sfartsed.org. Emily Keeler, Danny Duncan, thanks so much for stopping by today.
Thank you so much.
And just to get an earworm in your head for a Lil Abner, here is the great Stubby K and Jubilation T. Cornbone.
Zsa Zsa, honey, it's high time you knew that our town was founded by that beloved man a-setting up there on that beloved horse, Jubilation T. Cornpone. Greatest fighting general and military strategist the Confederacy ever knew.
Was he brave?
Brave? Why, J.T. Cornpone didn't know the meaning of the word fear. Terror, yes, but fear never. And all over the countryside, there's monuments commemorating the names of his famous battles.
Such as?
Cornpone's disaster, Cornpone's misjudgment, Cornpone's catastrophe, and Cornpone's humiliation. When we fought the Yankees and annihilation was near, who was there to lead the charge that took us safe to the rear? Why, it was Jubilation T. Cornpone. Old toot your own horn, Pone. Jubilation T. Cornpone, a man who knew no fear.
Tell us more, Sam.
Yeah, tell us. What else did he do?
When we almost had him, but the issue still was in doubt. Who suggested the retreat that turned it into a rout? Why, it was
Jubilation T. Cornpone.
He wrecked old tattered and torn Pone. Jubilation T. Cornpone, he kept us hiding out. With our ammunition gone and faced with utter defeat, who was it that burned the crops and left us nothing to eat? Why, it was Jubilation T. Cornpone. old September morn pone. Jubilation tea corn pone. The pants blown off his seat. Hooray!
The great Stubby K and a portion of Jubilation Tea Corn Pone from Lil Abner at the SF Arts Ed Kids will be doing. Go to sfartsed.org for more information. Good afternoon, David LaTulipe with you for Open Air. Still to come, Paula West will be sharing some details about her stint at Feinstein's at the NICO. Charlie Varon is a feisty old Jew at the Marsh. He'll be talking about his work there. And next I'm going to be talking with Lisa Steindler, who is artistic director of Z-Space. She's here to talk about the world premiere of 100 Days, a folk rock odyssey about love, life, and loss, conceived and composed by the Bengsons, who are Abigail and Sean Bengson. It has a run through April 6. Lisa has produced over 25 world premiere productions in the past 15 years. She's also directed many productions and is an equity actress in her own right, who's performed in many plays over the years, including ACT's production of Angels in America. Also for ACT, she created the Art Reach program, which she ran for 17 years, bringing theater into Bay Area public schools. From 1996 to 2004, Lisa also ran the Zoetrope Live series at Coppola Studios in North Beach. Lisa Steindler, welcome to KALW.
Thank you. Great to be here.
When did you first hear the music of the Bengsons?
About 4 years ago. And they were in town doing a gig, I believe, over at Starry Plough and Hotel Utah. And word got around that they were in town, and somebody knew somebody who knew somebody and said, "You got to hear these guys." I wasn't able to see the show that night, but the next day they came to Z Space and I met them and I fell in love with them, and I heard their music and I fell in love with them even more. It's a very unique sound. It's very American. They're storytellers and they tell stories through their music. And if you do come see the show, anybody out there, you will fall in love with them too, because they're quite unique and authentic.
Well, we'll hear their music in just a moment.
Great.
But let's talk a little bit about the show, the story of 100 Days. The subtitle gives an awful lot away. Folk rock odyssey
just
about love, life, and loss. But I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about what we'll hear and see there.
Yeah, so essentially the story is about a couple who meet and fall in love very quickly and decide to get married. Very soon after that, the man is diagnosed with a terminal illness. So they decide to live out, basically take the 100 days that they have left with one another on this earth and try to live out what would have been a lifetime of memories and a life of 60 years in those 100 years compacted. And the way we've structured the piece essentially is that the first half is really a rock concert. We have an incredible band we've put together with local artists. And then we shift kind of a little bit of reality in the second half, where they attempt to play this game of living their lives out, in holding themselves up in their apartment and living their lives out, what it would be perhaps. So it's a hybrid of a piece. We really we were struggling at one point of what to call it, because it's not a musical, and it's not a play, and it's not an opera. So I feel pretty good about what we came up with as a folk rock odyssey about love, loss, and life.
There you go. Well, you've written that this show fits very well with the mission of Z-Space. Mm-hmm. Now, what is that mission?
The mission essentially is to commission, develop, and produce new work. And I think the reason why this fits so well within our mission is that we've been working on this piece now for close to going into our fourth year. We've done probably 15 workshops over those 4 years. It's slowly building a team. Z-Space is very much about development and process for the artist. We don't rush things. It's been a labor of love for us, and it's a long process. And hopefully when we get it in front of an audience next week, people are going to enjoy that, the fruition of the joys of what we've done to take that time to create a piece like this.
Previews do begin next week. More information at zspace.org. Now, Obie Award winner Anne Kaufman is directing the show. How did she get involved?
Annie actually is a good friend of mine, and she directed a piece that some people might remember called The Typographer's Dream, which was written by Adam Bach, probably 8-some years ago. And so I worked with her for the first time on that, and then we worked on another piece that she didn't end up with, but Shaker Chair also by Adam Bach. She worked on a workshop of that piece. She's really one of, in my mind, one of the great directors of our times for new work. She works very much dramaturgically with the piece and is very much part of the collaborative and creative process in getting it on its feet.
So in addition to the Bengtsons, there must be a team involved in addition to Annie. Tell us about the creative team involved.
It's an enormous creative team.
Really?
Yeah, in some ways, I could consider this a devised piece of theater. And what I mean by that is that we didn't really start with a script per se. We started with an idea and we started with music. So over the years, it's really having the creative team of Sean and Abigail in the room, Kate E. Ryan, who is our book writer, Ann Kaufman, Caitlin Sullivan, and these are all people sitting at the table, James Farron, myself, sitting at the table trying to figure out the best way to tell this story. So there's not a playwright sitting in a room writing it per se, and then we hand it over to performers. It's really a collaborative process in that sense of what you're going to see. Sean and Abigail did all the lyrics and wrote the music very clearly, but as far as getting it, shaping the piece, it's been a large team.
Very nice. And it runs through April 6th.
That's correct.
At Z Space, 100 Days Music by the Bengtsons, which is Abigail and Sean Bengtson, directed by Annie Kaufman. A wonderful production. We're going to actually hear some music of 100 Days of the Bengtsons. And I just want to thank you for taking a little bit of time today to sharing what sounds like a really fun show.
My pleasure.
Or
thank you so much.
A moving show, especially.
It will be.
Of all 100 days.
It will be.
Thanks.
Thanks.
The first time we look up and find we've never had it any better.
And when we find it'll never get better, we'll build the world and fight the time.
I will never die.
I make America. Universe, I'll never go away.
Hey, 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 hey.
I am the universe, I'm your man. I'll never go away, away, away.
Break the hearts and say goodbye. You will never die.
I want 100 days of bright light. Hey, hey, away. 100 days, you're my man. And a bright light away.
I make America high. I am a universe high. I'll never go away.
Hey,
I am the universe, I am your man, I'll never go.
100 Days, music by the Bengsons. We'll be at Z-Space. Previews begin next week. The show, 100 Days, a folk rock odyssey about love, life, and loss, conceived and composed by the Bengsons, Abigail and Sean. More information at zspace.org or by calling 866-811-4111. Still to come, Paula West will be sharing some details about Feinstein's at the NICA, the gig she has there. And my next guest, Charlie Varon, has been a San Francisco resident since 1978, when his rent was about $70 a month. Lucky guy. People who spend that amount a month on lattes are part of the fodder of his one-man play at the Marsh called Feisty Old Jew. Charlie first appeared at the Marsh in 1991, and his shows have included titles like The People's Violin, Rabbi Sam, and Rush Limbaugh in Night School, which enjoyed a run in New York as well. He teaches solo performance at the Marsh, narrates audio tours for museums around the country, and is currently at work on a cycle of short stories called The Listener. Charlie, welcome back to Open Air.
Oh, it is good to be here.
So, the story of the Feisty Old Jew. The character's name is Bernie Shine. Talk to me about how this gestated. Is he the result of Spilkes in your Schenectady Zoinks?
A couple years ago, a whole raft of new characters took up residence in my imagination, and I have been racing to keep up with them, writing as fast as I can and having some of the most fun writing that I have ever had in my life. Characters who have lived rich lives. These are all old Jews living in a retirement home in San Francisco who have memories, who've seen incredible changes, who have children and grandchildren, and who get in trouble. And in this piece, Feisty Old Jew, Bernie Shine, who is maybe the most energetic, alive, difficult, a character about whom I have very mixed feelings. Much like my parents, when I
much experience but mixed feelings.
When my folks, I'm lucky that my folks are still around. They are old. I don't know. They live in New York, and I sent them this Bernie stuff, and my dad said, "I can't get enough of this guy," and my mom immediately said, "I can."
so that tells you what we're in for.
Bernie, he's a little bit in this story, in this piece, Feisty Old Jew. He's tired of the confines of the retirement home, and he needs to break out. And it's a kind of a octogenarian Curious George story. He gets in trouble. He's waiting for the cab on Post Street, and can I just give you a little taste?
Oh, please do.
Bernie was standing on Post Street waiting for a taxi. It was a hot October Sunday, as close to summer as San Francisco ever gets, the kind of day that slows down thought and action and especially traffic. Bernie had experienced worse. Today was nothing compared to the heat he'd grown up with in Brooklyn, so why was he letting it get to him? Of course, it didn't help that he was wearing a suit and tie, but the cream-colored linen three-piece Wilkes Bashford number was the right choice for the club, and the club would be air-conditioned, and so, the dispatcher had assured him, would the taxi cab. Where the hell was that cab? Okay, Bernie thought, there's more than one way to get someplace, and he stuck out his thumb. Cars slowed down, but they didn't stop. Drivers stared. Bernie knew what they were thinking. Old man off his meds. Nutcase in a $7,000 suit. The passenger window came down on a light blue Prius. A hairy man in a tank top stuck his head out the window, gave Bernie the thumbs up, and yelled, "Woohoo!" Then a car pulled over, and its back door flew open. It was black, shiny, a model Bernie didn't recognize. Two surfboards were strapped to the roof. Bernie got in. Nice car, leather seats, air-conditioned. Wonderful, overpowering smell of coffee. And coming through what had to be a $10,000 sound system, the magnificent voice of Tony Bennett, the best singer of his generation. But as Bernie's eyes adjusted, he saw there was no one else in that car remotely connected to that generation. So that's the beginning.
Oh, nice. So you're telling the story, and then you're going in and out of the characters.
In and out of characters. Nice. It's a very energized storytelling form that I have landed on. Trying to find kind of what can make how it can get the best of the literary form and the electricity of performance all in the same show.
So these are a lot of characters that you've met here in San Francisco.
No, these are all figments of my imagination.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I write to escape life. And it's also a story about San Francisco. I mean, it's my love letter to San Francisco. I've lived here for 35 years and raised my kids here, and I'm seeing the city change, and Bernie is seeing the city he has lived in for 60 years change, and he doesn't like what he sees.
Mm. Now,
and he doesn't like the young people. He doesn't like the fact that they will outlive him.
How much of you is creeping into this character?
I wonder about that. I think he's angrier than I am about the changes happening. The hipsters, the techies, the truffle oil and the creme brulee and the
No, don't knock the truffle oil. I kind of like the truffle oil myself.
The pink aioli.
So are the characters in your one-man shows always informed by Judaism?
I'm a Jew from New York, not always, not all of them, but certainly, I mean, the last...
I mean, Bernie certainly...
Only for the last 20 years. I'm trying to figure out what this generation, my parents' generation, a generation who are dying. Most of my parents' friends are gone. And to understand what this generation of American Jews has lived through, a generation that came of age before television, came of age during the Depression. I mean, here's Bernie, a guy who grew up in Brooklyn with nothing. Nothing. He doesn't have a high school diploma. He has crawled his way up to the top. He has made enough money to wind up in elegant assisted living. And here he is, a child of the Depression, looking at San Francisco in the year 2014 and looking at the excess, at the people throwing. I mean, there's a line. There's one moment where he hated what these kids had turned San Francisco into. He people who made money off of nothing and spent it on nothing. So it's a wrestle with generations. It's a wrestle with what a city is and is becoming. It's a wrestle with time. And of course the passengers in this car, it's a Tesla, and they've got, you know, with 320 somethings in it, the
car, cappuccino car,
the
Tesla.
Cappuccino maker in the dashboard. Bernie loves coffee, but he doesn't like the young people who spend $6 on coffee.
So how does this surfing work into the story?
Well, by the time they get to the beach in Bolinas, Bernie has convinced these 320-somethings to let him go surfing for the first time in his life, and he has bet them $400,000 that he will ride a wave. And that's as much of the plot as I'm going to give away.
I was going to say, you can't really create that part on the stage of the Marsh.
Well, you can that's been the great surprise and the great pleasure of this run so far, is people are totally buying it. They're totally taking the ride in their imagination. They're creating all the visuals, which, of course, saves on things like costumes and sets.
True enough. Well, it's the magic of theater.
It's the magic of the imagination. It's the magic of spoken word. It's the magic of, rich language and rich description.
It's Charlie Varon. He is the feisty old Jew through March 16th at themarsh.org for more information. More information about what Charlie's up to is at charlievaron.com, charlievaron.com. Now, I noticed at your website that you have written extensively about Judaism and Judaism more specifically in the 21st century. I'm wondering if you could, is this show a part of the evolution of some of your thinking as well, or are you unrelated? Do you call yourself Jewish, or as I've heard people say, Jew-ish?
No, I'm Jewish. My big wrestle with American Judaism was Rabbi Sam, the solo show that I did 5 years ago, which is the story of a rabbi who wants to reinvent American Judaism. But feisty old Jew, Bernie is not observant in any way. He's culturally Jewish, and he's very much a New Yorker who came to San Francisco and found his home here, his livelihood, and yet has never lost that East Coast edge, that desire, that sense that there's always another mountain to climb, another stock tip, another gamble. He's been a broker. He's sold all kinds of things. He's a card shark, and he's very physically fit. He can bench press 200 pounds. So he is not, and there's this moment where he's telling him, and this one of the passengers is saying, you know, it's not a good idea for an old man to surf. And he explains that he's not an ordinary old man. He goes to the gym every day.
He's a New Yorker, guy, damn it.
He is still climbing mountains of sorts at age 83. And the thing that, as I was working on this piece, is that the vital energy, the life energy coming through this guy, just fueled the writing of the story. He is full of life and anger, and I just had to get out of the way and let him take the story where it would go.
It's at the Marsh through March 16th, themarsh.org, for more information. Talk to us a little bit about your collaborative relationship with David Ford.
I've been working with David for 23 years, collaborator, director.
Quite a bromance.
Yes. I think of our work together as a kind of, you know, several decades long conversation where we thrash out what is the story, who is this character. And he never lets me get away with, you know, with anything less than the most exciting theater that we can make. And so even when I disagree with him, that conversation is productive. So I owe a huge amount to David. He's taught me most of what I know about theater. He's an extraordinary. I think Rob Hurwit, in his end of year theater column in the Chronicle, named him the MVP, and that's an honor that's, you know, a long time coming. He's been working with so many of us. He worked with Brian Copeland. He's worked with lots and Jeff Hoyle, lots and lots of performers. And I've become a director and collaborator as well. And I very much, you know, when I'm directing Dan Hoyle and his work, I'm very much drawing on what I've learned with David.
Fascinating. So the show is running through March 16th. Oh, I understand we have a special ticket offer for people. If you order tickets to the Feisty Old Jew just today until midnight, for every ticket that is booked, the Marsh is going to donate $5 to KALW. Fantastic offer. We're very grateful for that. So if you go to the web at themarsh.org, order tickets to Feisty Old Jew, I'm sure you'll love the show. Plus,
you need to click on Radio Special and use the code KALW, and it's our way, my way of saying how much we love this station.
That's very nice and very generous of you, Charlie.
The tickets are almost all gone for this run, except for March 16th. There are, I think, about 40 or 50 tickets left for March 16th, so that's a good day to pick. And if you use that Radio Special and click on KALW, we will tally those up and it'll help support KALW.
So again, at themarsh.org, and you'll see a Radio Special, and the code will be KALW. Every ticket ordered until midnight tonight for any of the shows that are remaining, KALW will get a generous $5 donation for every ticket that's ordered. Thanks, Charlie. Hey, you also do voice acting, museum podcast for SF MoMA. What else is on your plate these days?
Well, I am I do narrate audio tours, and I am the narrator of the audio tour for the Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit at the De Young.
Oh, great.
Currently.
Great.
So, yeah, I do that for museums all over the country.
Very nice. You can learn more about Charlie's project at his website, charlieverin.com. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks
I wish you a fantastic
me.
Run.
Thank you.
Paula West in just a moment here on KALW.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. Let me know what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, take my hand. In other words, darling, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you. Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. Let me know what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, take my hand. In other words, darling, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
And I do love that sound. It's the inimitable chanteuse Paula West.
Thank you.
Here in studio. Such a pleasure to welcome Bay Area jazz vocalist Paula West back to the open air airwaves. No stranger to KALW. She was just heard this past Saturday on West Coast Live. She's appeared on this show with my predecessor, Alan Farley, a number of times. And on occasion, you can hear her as a guest panelist for Minds Over Matter.
Oh, it's been a while. I forgot about that.
Paula West has had steady gigs in New York and San Francisco, and a year ago appeared with Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra to perform in the work for which Marsalis won a Pulitzer Prize, Blood on the Fields. She's at Feinstein's at the Nikko for a four-week engagement through March 9. Paula, although this is our first dialogue, welcome back once
Thank
again
you.
To KALW.
Thank you.
San Diego-born girl, but you consider yourself a San Francisco.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. This is definitely my hometown, and the people have been really wonderful and supportive.
You opened your show on the day before Valentine's Day, the current show, tunes that are pretty heavy on heartache, betrayal, neglect.
And I don't know how that
intentional
happened. No, no, but I, you know what? It had been a while since I'd had an extended run in town, and those songs happened to be in the queue. And I wanted to have a balance of, you know, swing and, you know, romance. And there's still that swing and romance and sense of humor. But, you know, that it just happened that some of the material was like that.
So it's not
not going to leave crying
or depressed.
I was going
to say it's not a cry fest.
No, it's nothing like that.
So how do you come up with a set list? Does anyone help you out with this? First of all, my condolences for your loss in 2012 of your longtime musical director, George Mesterházy.
Thank you.
But how do you work on, how does the set come into creation?
Well, like I said before, I like to take people in different moods. So I think, you know, you have the romance, you don't want to have too many ballads. I like to have the different arrangements, which Adam Shulman made the arrangements. So, you know, some of them might have a world music influence, a Latin influence, gospel influences, a swing, and the ballad. So so you're not getting bored. I hope, you know, everything's a surprise once you hear it.
Wonder if you could tell us some of the process, the business process of putting together a set like that versus making a recording. There must be rights issues involved with recordings that you have to secure. Is it so much so for a performance, or is that just covered under a blanket?
No, and actually, once a song has been recorded, you know, they can't really not allow you to record a song. But if you stole something from somebody and are claimed it was yours or you written it, that's when you get into problems.
Mm-hmm. But don't you have to pay rights
yes.
fees for, and songs can vary in price in terms of
yes,
what you're allowed
depending
to
on how long it is and things like that.
Right. So how, have you ever been in a situation wanting to record a tune, but the rights were prohibitively?
No.
Good. That's no. fantastic. So that doesn't factor in your sit so much. That,
no.
Great. And have you ever had a tune that you really love, but that just isn't right for your either your voice or your gender?
Well, I do the gender bending with tunes, and actually that's in my favor to do that because maybe they haven't heard a woman interpret the song, so then it sounds fresh. And I think that's a model I use for a lot of tunes also, to do something that you don't normally hear a woman sing. Mm-hmm. What else did you ask about that?
If there's a tune that just doesn't, a tune you love, that just doesn't work for your particular voice.
Not voice so much as the topic, you know, depending on your age and things, you can't, you know, sing like Here's to Life if you, you know, still have a few decades left in you and things. It's kind of like something you would sing at, how would I phrase that? You know, you're coming to the end, or you've got more
right.
Years behind you than ahead mm-hmm. of you. And, you know, some songs, the lyrics might be antiquated and just don't go today.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do mix up things from the Great American Songbook as well as contemporary artists. I'm wondering if you have a favorite composer of bygone and a favorite composer of someone that's writing music today.
Okay. I would probably say from the, what we call it, you know, the American Songbook would probably be Rodgers and Hart, with Cole Porter a close second. Mm. And as far as, I don't know how contemporary it is because it's actually classic now too. I love Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, he's been around 50 plus years now, so.
Does Sondheim work into the repertory very much?
I haven't really gotten too much into Sondheim because I think Sondheim works better in a context of a show, you know, and for the most part, if you're going to do a Sondheim in a performance, there's an example of music that maybe isn't, just doesn't quite. And, you know, a lot of jazz artists don't do Sondheim. It's just not.
Mm-hmm.
Than too often.
You were recently diagnosed with diabetes and dropped over 80 pounds. Now, I imagine this is not a weight loss method that you'd advise.
No, but you can't imagine how many people, women in particular, tell me how lucky I am. I think if you could package it to make people lose weight, I think a lot of people would take up on it. I'm convinced of that.
So what has this journey been like? It must be coming into diabetes at your age. I mean, you're not that old, but
yeah.
you're still as an
yeah.
adult.
Well, it is. I mean, I don't want to, because I don't think I've been overly dramatic about it, but, you know, it's just, you have to make some adjustments, you know, into what you eat. And I always get exercise because I walk with my dog often, and I'm walking all over town all the time. But it's mainly, you know, certain foods that I just can't, you know, be impulsive about picking up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll let it go there for the health portion of our interview.
Okay.
Now, what's been your favorite space to sing in?
I like to play anywhere where I'm appreciated. I like the intimate rooms, like the Nico. I also, you know, enjoy doing jazz festivals and just anywhere where the music is appreciated and with musicians I love to work with.
And you were recently featured last season at SF Jazz, right?
Yeah, I've done a couple of things with them, which is...
You like the space?
I love it. And, you know, they've done a terrific job. Of the, you know, just everything, it, you know, modeled kind of like after Lincoln Center, and everything has fallen into place there. It's extremely successful.
Mm. Going back there, I hope soon.
Yes.
Nice. Now, I love the fact that you enjoy singing the verses as well as the choruses to tunes. Now, for those for whom this might be inside baseball, I guess we can explain it as the intros to the songs, and then the more familiar is the chorus now on that, which is often a very different mood from what the tune is coming out, the introduction, and then suddenly this flower blooms that is the familiar song.
And that's another way that you make your program interesting, because most people have no idea that the overwhelming majority of the songs from the classic songbook have verses to them.
Right. Well, I mentioned that you were a guest before on Minds Over Matter, so I got the bell from the Minds Over Matter studio.
Oh, no.
And we're going to have a Minds Over Matter portion of the show.
Okay.
With verses and choruses.
Not for me, for the audience.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you the verse, and you tell me the chorus. You ready?
Okay.
Each time I look at you is like the first time. Each time you're near me, the thought is new. And there's nothing that I wouldn't do for the rare delight of the thought of you for.
It's not the pale moon that excites me. It's not that one.
The more I see
you. Oh, great.
You. Okay.
Bravo.
That's one for me.
Okay.
All right, here's another one.
Uh-oh.
Old man sunshine, listen, you. Don't tell me that dreams come true. Just try it, and I'll start a riot. Beatrice Fairfax, don't you dare. Try to tell me he will care. I'm certain it's the final curtain. I'd never want to hear from any cheerful Pollyannas who tell you fate supplies a mate. It's all bananas.
Oh, I know this. Once you tell me the answer.
It's from Girl Crazy. Gershwin.
I'll start a riot.
They're writing songs.
There you go.
Of love,
okay.
But not
for
me.
Thank you.
I'm two and two here. I don't know. I hope you get a couple of these.
All right.
All right. This one you got to get.
You sure? Okay.
Yeah. Time and again I've longed for adventure, something to make my heart beat the faster. What did I long for? I never really knew. Finding your love, I've found my adventure. Touching your hand, my heart beats the faster. All that I want in all of this world is you.
I've heard every single one of these verses,
you
but I'm...
You are...
Okay, there you...
I'm too high for my voice.
No.
I started too high.
So you know all of these tunes. Good for you.
There we go. Well, we'll hope to catch... We won't have the Minds Over Matter work on.
I feel like a big loser right now.
Okay. Well, if you want to see Paula's show at the Nico, do you have a question for me, perhaps?
Give
me a verse. Let's redeem yourself here and embarrass me.
You could have asked me this before the show to think of something that might have helped.
No, it's putting you on the spot. That's not fair. How about something from your current show? You must be doing some verse.
Yes, I am. And I'm trying to think of it right now. I can't think of the lyrics. So I'm sorry.
All right, next time.
You win. Okay, I'm going to be prepared.
We'll go
head
to head next time on that.
Yes, we will.
Well, if you want tickets for tonight's show, you are SOL, which in radio land
means I know. I got
sold
one real quick.
Out. Okay, sure. Go ahead.
Every time I look down on this timeless down, whether blue or gray be your skies, whether soft be your tears or whether warm be your cheers, every time I realize that.
You're right. This is tough to be on the spot for that. I don't got it. Don't have it.
I love Paris in the springtime. There you go.
Well, okay. I'll give you one you have to. The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay.
Yeah, that one. I left my heart in San
of course.
Francisco.
Yeah, right.
They would kick me out.
So what's next on the touring front for you? Are you continuing primarily in cabaret dates? Or?
I have things in the works, so I can't really exactly confirm anything
sure.
right now, but
all right.
We'll definitely be doing, you know, some more things in San Francisco and definitely in New York.
So. Very nice.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, if you wanted tickets for tonight at Nico Feinstein's at the Nico, you are SOL, which in Radioland means sold out, not what you think it means. But other nights, tickets are available at ticketweb.com. Take a browse there and see what you can come up with for available dates.
The shows are really selling out. It's been an amazing run. The first week was sold out, and it's just snowballing.
Nice. I wish you every success with it. Now, you mentioned earlier your penchant for gender bending some tunes. I'm going to play a tune from your latest CD that does just that, Wichita Lineman.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for being here, Paula.
Thank you.
I am alive. County. And I drive the main road, looking in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire. I can hear you. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line. No, I need a small vacation, but it don't look like rain. And if it snows, that stretch down south won't ever stand the strain. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line.
Feinstein's at the Nico. Remaining tickets at ticketweb.org. I'm David Latulippe. You've been listening to Open Air. A reminder that for Charlie Varon's show, A Feisty Jew, you can order tickets online at themarsh.org. Enter, look for the radio offer, and then type in KALW for every ticket that's ordered before midnight tonight for the rest of his run. $5 will come to KALW. Thanks for listening to Open Air. Our shows are archived at KALW.org. It's there you can send us some show suggestions or send a comment about today's show. You can also email me, david@KALW.org. My producer is Niels Swinkels. As always, thanks for helping us herd cats during this special hour of Open Air. This is KALW San Francisco. It's 2 o'clock.
BBC World Service. This is Owen Bennett Jones with NewsHour. And today, conflict in Ukraine with blood on the streets and no political settlement. We hear from NewsHour's Jamie Kumarasamy, who's in Kiev.
I've been visiting one of this city's main cathedrals, which has been turned into a makeshift medical centre, and today, a makeshift morgue.
With three EU ministers negotiating with the Ukrainian government, can the president avoid a choice between Moscow or Brussels? Also today, the man who predicted his own sacking.
People said to me, you can't touch these people, you'll be sacked. Or you can't touch these people, they will kill you. And I said, you know what? We are going to take them on.
That's the governor of the Central Bank of Nigeria. And first, a bulletin of the latest world news.